Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to, hey, Great Shot. This is the Great Shot Podcast, a Crack Rackets and Tennis Channel Podcast Network production. My name is Alex Gruskin. If it's a Monday, you know what we're talking about here on this show. Another ATP Challenger edition of the podcast hosted by our friends Damian Kust and Jakob Bobrow. On today's episode, they discuss back-to-back title runs from Cerundolo and Bonzi. They discuss Agamenone's rise through the ITF ranks, results early here in the week on the Challenger Tour, and so much more. It is another fantastic edition of the show. I know all of you are going to enjoy. A couple of quick things before we get to it. A, if you're looking for US Open recap content, that is going to be on the Mini Break podcast feed. David Kane joined me to break down the women's singles event. Gil Gross is going to be joining me tomorrow to break down the men's singles action. We were also live at the Knoxville Showdown this weekend. Got to see Kentucky, Columbia, Tennessee, and Pepperdine play. If you want to hear interviews from that event, hop on over to our Cracked Interviews podcast feed. All of that content can be found on our website, crackedrackets.com. Of course, shout out to you, listeners. Shout out to our Patreon family for helping to make all of that content possible. But with that in mind, let's get to it. Another ATP Challenger-centric edition of the show with host Damian Kust and Jakob Bobrow.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the next episode of the Challenger Tour podcast. We are going to talk about five events with my friend Jakob here, who, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. We're doing an early morning record per my request. I don't know why I requested this. It's a horrible idea. It's so early.
The usual hours are usually better, but you know, then we need to do a morning record, but anyhow, you're still going to hear this at a regular time. Well, that actually depends on Alex, not on us, but as the producer, I guess. But anyhow, last time we couldn't quite get that draft pick competition to a close, but it turns out that it actually wasn't that interesting coming forward. But it was 88-64 in the end, because Koi Koyovchuk got 2 points for you, right? And one, I got one from Hota and one from Vladislavskul. So anyhow, it's pretty much where we left it at. But we also had that new rule that when the qualifier wins the slam, the guy who beats him wins it. And you know, it didn't happen in the men's, but if we ever did a women's competition, then...
It would have been actually relevant, which is pretty crazy to think about. Quite incredible. But yeah, as you may have heard, Goroshik did not win the entire tournament, so I kind of knew that I was not going to win it.
If he did, you would have won regardless, right?
Yes, yeah.
I
feel like if Goroshik won, the world would burn just because of the pure chaos that would be happening. Like, oh yeah, just a 32-year-old or however old Petr Goroshik has decided to become a slam winner.
It's better when a 19-year-old does that, definitely.
Yes, yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, and I think we also didn't have any points this week in the winner predictions.
I had one.
You had one?
Bonzi, yeah.
Who? Come again?
Bonzi.
Bonzi? You picked him again?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I have no idea. Actually, I absolutely forgot about that. So you're 9-6 up now? Oh, shit.
Yes, I'm absolutely murdering you in this game, which I was losing in for so many weeks.
Yeah.
But yes, I'm dominating. You came pretty close. You cut by it by now.
Yes, and I mean, there was like Echeverri bias. We had so many good picks this week. I never even realized that you had Bonzi as well. That's a shock to me, but let's get to the events then. Where do we start? Toulon, the biggest one.
Yeah, I mean, let's start with Bonzi. He beat Luca Fui in Cassie. Yeah, it's not the biggest event, but it's probably the biggest, like the best field, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
7-6-6-4, fifth challenger title, all of them this year. He's been an incredible challenger tour player. He's up to number 76 now in the rankings, so presumably we won't be seeing as much of him next year, unfortunately. But on this round, he beat Thomas Fabiano, Alexis Galeno, Luca Van Asch, and Kacper Zhuk. Yeah, what did you think of Benjamin Bonzi this week?
He's incredible. I mean, 44 wins already. He can truly get to the records, but I'm assuming he won't play as much. I mean, he's playing Grand this week, but I'm assuming that he'll stop playing challengers at some point soon because there's going to be all these indoor events in France like Metz. He was also signed up for Nur-Sultan, was it? So, you know, the records for wins in a single season is 57. Carlos Berloc holds that one, so you know maybe Bonzi can get to that, but then again I don't know how many more challengers he plays, and maybe he can actually get to the title record because it's six, so he needs just one, and it's currently held by Younes Elaynaoui, Juan Ignacio Shela, and Facundo Bagnis. But anyhow, another crazy week for him. I mean, he's just the best player on the challenger tour the whole year. It's actually funny because he said that he's 76 right now. Arthur Rinderknecht, he's 77. They faced in the first challenger final of the year in Istanbul. Very close final, definitely one of the best matches of the year. And pretty much Bonzi has like 70% of his points from challengers, while Rinderknecht made like four ATP quarterfinals. So they did it. They had absolutely different paths since Istanbul, but they're pretty much at the same ranking. So it's actually pretty funny that you can do it both ways. Last week I also talked a lot about French juniors, and I guess Van Asch was hugely impressive. The win over Cheikh Bilek was something I definitely didn't expect. As I said last time, there's no specific shot that makes him so good. He's just extremely solid and consistent. Like in terms of potential, that usually tends to run out at some point. But you know, he was the only player to take a set of Bonzi this week. So for now, he's definitely the most impressive one. So the juniors, Patchy Pericard qualified and lost to Kokkinakis, but his serve is absolutely massive, so he should also start rising pretty soon. And Arthur Fils was maybe the least impressive one, but he still played two very tight sets with Tatsuma Ito, and once again, his set of weapons is very impressive.
Mm-hmm. I also want to ask you about Clément Chidek. Who made the quarterfinals. He's a little older. He's 20. Beat Cazo, beat Moria before losing to Puy in the quarters. Did you see any of him?
I saw the match against Puy. Hidek, or however it's read, he's playing college for University of Washington. And he actually won 25K in Ajaccio in the summer over Petros Tsitsipas, by the way, which was Petros' first final, I think, especially at this level. And he looked very solid. The backhand was really good. I mean, obviously, he's probably going to go to the States right now. I think he's signed up for another 25K. But a guy on Twitter also sent me draws from some French events, and he was also very dominant in them. So definitely someone to look forward to once he graduates.
And we should also talk about Luca Pui, I guess. His first final in 2.5 years, I think.
Yes, I mean, he's been having a horrible season. When you look at his results this year, the only time he's ever had two wins in a row was to qualify for an event. So I had no trust in him coming in. Obviously, his draw probably wasn't the hardest. He started against João Sousa, who has also been having a pretty terrible year outside of his Mallorca run, where I think he made the quarters or something. Beat Imer, beat Shadeh and Liam Brody. He didn't drop a set, so that was good to see his level sort of rise again after such a difficult year for him.
Yeah, and I guess that would be all from Cassis, or is there anything else?
I mean, Juk made the semis, which was nice to see. We didn't have a lot of trust in him after his first round loss.
He lost to Kuzmanov,
You know, I mean, like the run beating Rodionov, Ito, and Kokkinakis, that's a pretty good tournament for Juk. And only losing to Bonzi, I mean, you can't ask for much more from him. So it's good to see him back in contention for these titles.
Yeah, definitely. Finally, because you know, the indoor season is coming and he should definitely be a factor in there. So.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you want to go now?
Let's go to Toulon, where we would probably start otherwise. How did I not want to have that Bonzi transition there? It was the biggest tournament this week. Mats Morang beat the eighth seed Hugo Gaston 6-2, 6-1. It's his fourth challenger title. He gets to re-enter the top 200 at number 193. He's moved up almost 50 points.
Really? He's had a merit, actually. But, four. You're right. Then I screwed up in an article. Never mind.
he had a very interesting run where his first and last match were sort of very straightforward, 6-2, 6-1 in both. And then his matches against Kovalik, Monteiro, and Vesely have all been huge battles that he sort of made his way through. What did you think of Mats Morang this week?
Yeah, I'm just changing that because fortunately it hasn't been published yet. a pretty stupid run. I mean, 46 minutes was the shortest challenger final this season. I think the previous one was Korda over Horański in Quimper, 50 minutes. It's actually just 3 minutes shy of the shortest challenger final ever. So, I mean, Ryan is always one of these players that, you know, when they're on, they can beat anyone. A matchup like Gaston is, I guess, a very good one for him because everything depends on what he plays. Gaston can't really. With Gaston, people always think of him as a defender, as a counter puncher, but I actually think he's definitely overrated in that regard. I think he's at his best when he has a lot of time and space to lead the play, but not in the way, you know, people usually do that. He has his own way of doing that. He can employ the drop shot. He can mix off-pace balls with suddenly going for a bigger forehand, and he just can't do that against Morang. Obviously, his attitude also wasn't great in the final. Like by the second set, he was totally checked out mentally, from like 7 double faults, 3 of them consecutive or something like that, and definitely didn't look that great. In the last game, he played a few actually very good rallies from the ground. He was really going for his shots, but you know, it's easy to do that when you're 2-6, 1-5 down and without any sort of chance to come back. Morang, I feel like is very underrated at the moment. He's already won two this year and definitely playing far better than his ranking suggests. And that was probably best evidenced with the Djokovic match at Belgrade.
I mean, very impressive run. Other things that happened in Toulon, Yuji Vesely made the semifinals, which was kind of a surprise for me. He's not been doing great in these clay challengers where he's been a high seed. He struggled a bit. He beat Neumeier, Blancano and my pick for the win, Denis Novak, who I picked mostly because he was missed his section actually before losing to Morang in three. So it's good to see him back after the car crash. So good to see him do well. And we also had Filip Misolic, who took out your pick for the title, Marco Cecchinato. And then also followed it up with a win over Jonas Voretek. He's 20 years old. He got a wild card into the event, number 460 now, after the move up from the points from this tournament. So did you get to see Misolic this week?
Some bits. At first it looked like a very bad loss for Cecchinato, but then when he followed it up with the wins against Foretek and taking Cassette of Gaston, clearly not being ready to transfer from hardcourts to clay was not the only reason that Cecchinato lost that first round, but definitely not, I didn't get to see him as much as I would have liked to have a better grip of what he could do, but he always, was kind of there as one of the more talented young Austrians, so... good to see him taking the opportunity. There was also a guy called Neil Oberleitner who defeated Moleker, which is obviously not a huge achievement at this point in time, but he lost to Gaston in a very competitive first round as well. Kamil Majszak also made the semis, and at one point I definitely thought he was winning the tournament, but the match against Gaston was pretty disappointing on his part at least.
Mm-hmm. Do we have anything else from Poland?
I don't.
Yeah, let's go to Sevilla, where we had Pedro Martinez beat Roberto Carvajal Baena 6-4, 6-1 in the final. Third challenger title for Martinez. He moves up 16 spots, number 59 now. In his run, he beat Emilio Nava, Raul Brancaccio, Flavio Cobolli, and Carlos Taberner. What did you think of Martinez this week?
Yeah, I had Carvajal Baena as my pick, and he actually led the head-to-head like 3-0 against Martinez, but all the matches, 2018 or 2017. Martinez very recently smashed him in the Bundesliga, and he did so again here. There was just... In a matchup like this, there's just one weapon on the court, which is the Martinez forehand, and it just made a huge difference. Carvajal Baena doesn't really have a way to react to an opponent playing very aggressively and playing very well. So it's just the story of his career, I guess. Martinez had a very tough run, I feel like. Cobolli, Taberner, Carvajal Baena, that's definitely pretty big. Emilio Nava played a great match against him in the first round also. It was just one break in each set, and Nava was definitely... at least playing very close to his level. Taberner is another interesting thing because in the semis, he was actually one match away from the top 100. I think he's like 101 right now or something like that. So he's definitely very, very, very close to getting in there. But Martinez is in the top 60 even at the moment, which is a very fair... despite all the ranking freezes, I think it's a very fair number for him because he's not only been doing great on clay in challengers, but he also had some great results on hard courts on the main tour. So definitely someone who deserves to be in the top 60 at the moment. He actually pulled out from Szczecin next week, so. Mm-hmm. It's a bigger event, so he's definitely very satisfied with what he did in Seville. Because how was the experience of watching, by the way, for you the yellow clay?
I actually didn't hate it that much. I didn't have the biggest issue with it. We talked a lot about the top five seeds being all Spanish and basically being the only contenders. The only guy who managed to break that up was Marcelo Tomás Barrios Vera by making it into the semifinals. A big upset over Andújar, I felt, 6-4 in the third. Definitely wasn't easy for him. To be fair, kind of an easy loss to Carvajal Baena there, 1-3. So it's not the best follow-up. But we also had a qualifier, Luciano Darderi, 19-year-old from Italy, who qualified and then beat Jimena Valero and Gaio to make the quarters before losing to Carvajal Baena.
Yeah, that was a great match against Carvajal Baena. Definitely Darderi is someone to pay attention to. By the way, coming back to Taberner, I just realized that, you know, he was very close to the top 100, but this week he's going to drop 90 points. So he's down to 117 in the live rankings. So to get the top 100 now, he would pretty much have to win Szczecin, which actually is a very interesting thing, because it looks like Taberner might be, you know, it might have been his chance to get to the top 100, but right now it's going to be really tough. Like, unless he does really well this week and he has a very tough first round, which we're going to talk about later, he might not be getting there in the near future.
Yeah, that's really, really unfortunate for him. Do we have anything else from Sevilla?
I don't think so. Let me look at the notes. No, I didn't.
Cool. Let's move on to Kiev, where we had honestly a pretty shock final result, at least for me. I was not expecting this, to be entirely honest. Franco Agamenone beating the top seed Sebastian Baez, whom we both picked to win the title, 7-5, 6-2. The second challenger title after winning the 15 Prague. He's up 61 spots to number 230, which is absolute madness when you consider where he started this year, which was outside the top 650, was number 675 when he played the 15K qualifying in Cairo to start his 2021. Paolo Lorenzi retired earlier this year. Has his energy transferred to a new Italian player who is now rising to become the new Lorenzi? Because this guy is 28. This is coming essentially out of nowhere here. And we're probably going to be seeing him on the challenger circuit quite regularly with his ranking now. So it's pretty crazy. He beat Stefan Kozlov, Tristan Lamassine, Oleksiy Krutikh, and Timofey Skatov before that Baez upset in the final. What did you think of Franco Agamenone?
Yeah, as you said, it's pretty crazy. He's going to play slam qualies now. Like, he's pretty much nothing. So he's just going to have to be in the Australian Open qualies draw, I think. So it's incredible for him, especially from the money standpoint, I guess. I mean, the guy barely earned anything for the most of his life, even though he's playing singles and doubles, like, interchangeably. He's got 12 titles this year now, 6 in singles, 6 in doubles. I mean, for a guy who's barely been winning, been playing challengers even, like, I think he had 2 main draw appearances on the challenger tour before this year. It's incredible. He's another one of these guys who just don't really do anything exceptionally well, but he's at the absolute peak of his abilities right now. And even if, you know, one could still underestimate him after, well, comparing his run to what Baez had, he had a much tougher draw. Like, definitely Skatov, Krutikh, Lamassine, Kozlov, that's a lot tougher than what Baez had. And then we still didn't expect him to do this well in the final. And even if you could underestimate him after all the first 4 wins, then doing that against Baez, it's great, because he started his journey on the ITF tour. He won 59 matches in 6 months. And it just shows that you can, even as a 28-year-old, you can get through that level. You can get through it very quickly and then suddenly become a challenger tour champion twice. Obviously, the event in Prague was a 50. This was a regular challenger 80 event. So, incredible run. I'm not sure, you know, Italian, if to compare him with Lorenzi, he's pretty much Argentinian, but he started representing Italy.
Yes, and that's where his journey started. So I feel like he got the Lorenzi energy off of his Italian citizenship that he
it's an interesting idea. I mean, he was also suspended for doping until January 2020. So it's actually not when he it wasn't when he doped that he had these best results, but when he stopped. Which is
I'm just hoping that he's actually clean this time and we don't have to like amend all of the because it's a really amazing story for this guy to come out of nowhere at 28.
Even if he would be, like, he's not playing this well because of doping can't really have you do that. It can help you improve physically, but you know,
he's not out there looking roided up. Like he doesn't look like a bodybuilder or something.
No, he's definitely not. Just a regular guy. And I guess, you know, I think I read that he didn't appeal the verdict and anything. Like it just seemed like he just, you know, took it on the chest and decided to go clean, and suddenly everything started clicking. I mean, fantastic story, really.
Crazy. Yeah, I mean, I would have bet my house on Baez in the final with the run that he had. He didn't struggle at any point, and I'm glad that I didn't, because I'd be out on the street doing this right now. But yeah, I mean, like Baez wasn't dropping any sets. He was just having these like regular wins against, you know, Rybakov, Giannu, Kirkin, and to just like come into the final and Agamemnon just beats him. It's pretty wild. But yeah, we mentioned Skatov. He made the semis here, which was pretty impressive. Beat Jay Clark in the first round, Georgi Kravchenko, Nuno Borges. And I didn't see that match, but it looks great. 6-7, 6-4, 6-4 in that one. So it looks like Borges might be back to playing good tennis again. So that's exciting. And then we also had Ergi Kirkin, another young-ish guy, because he's what, 22? Yeah. Who actually beat Stakovsky in the second round. So two pretty interesting guys in the semis as well. Anything else from Kyo?
Yeah, Kirkin won 3 ITFs in a row before that week. Actually, when you look at the opponents he beat there, it wasn't anything super impressive. Like one example that always comes to my mind is the Romanian guy, Nicolas David Ionel, who won 4 ITFs, like 415Ks in a row, I think 2 years ago. And basically there were no impressive wins in there. And he, you know, where is he right now? Like, I haven't seen him in I don't know how long. And but actually Kirkin was pretty good. It's actually great that Stakovsky also got a chance to play in front of his home crowd, because I guess he wasn't really, you know, during his career, he didn't really have a chance to do that. And he now got one in the last year on the professional circuit. There was also Alexei Krutik, who made the semis at Nur-Sultan last month, or is it 2 months already? I think it's like 2 months already. And it turns out he's actually a very good talent. I think we might get to see him a lot more on the Challenger Tour. Won a great match against Orlando Luz. I didn't see the quarters against Agamenone. I mean, there's really no shame in losing to Agamenone right now. Krutik has got a very solid game from both wings. He can definitely hit with good power and depth. And I am hoping to see him a lot more, because I really liked watching him this week.
Yeah. Taking it back to Stakovsky for a bit, I wonder if he's going to make Bratislava his last tournament. Because he's lived there for at least 10 years at this point. Like I remember he's lived there all the way back in 2012. So I wonder if like he's going to make that sort of his other home tournament, in a way, his last, because it is pretty much towards the end there. But yeah, should we go to Banja Luka to close out this week's challengers that we had?
Yep.
Yeah, Banja Luka, Juan Manuel Cerúndolo beat Nikola Milojevic 6-3, 6-1. Third challenger title, back-to-back titles, and he's up 27 spots to number 108. So very close to overtaking his brother, who's at number 104, I believe, and very close to breaking the top 100 overall. It was quite an impressive run. A very odd start, losing the first to Malik Jaziri 6-1. but from then on, he didn't drop a set. He ended up beating Jaziri 1-6, 6-3, 6-4. Got a walkover from Petrotic in the second round, but then beat Tseng 6-2, 6-0, Echeverri 6-3, 6-3, and Milojevic 6-3, 6-1. So absolutely just steamrolled, as much as Cerundolo's style can steamroll a field. What did you think of him this week?
Yeah, steamroll is exactly the word I used in my tweet yesterday, and I was also thinking, like, I mean, okay, he won very easily, but
he won
steamroll. I mean,
it's kind of like back in the day when Wozniacki was number one, and she would like win a title. Was like, well, she doesn't really steamroll anybody though. So
yeah, I mean, like, I can say that I don't know, Roger Federer steamrolled, but I don't know Juan Manuel Cerundolo, like Mats Morain steamrolled Hugo Gaston, but Cerundolo. But anyhow, very impressive. Actually, the set to Jaziri was the only one he lost all week, in both weeks. So in both Banja Luka and Como. So that's even more impressive, especially as before that, when he was trying to go for back-to-back titles, he would lose in the first round like 5 times out of 6. So finally, he managed to get over that first hurdle, and you know, maybe the walkover against Pekotic really helped him. We both had Tomas Martin Echeverri as our pick for this event. He lost in the semis to Cerundolo 3-6, 3-6. It wasn't as competitive as I thought it would be. I don't know if Echeverri just doesn't seem that, you know, in that Italy form yet, but I don't know, he's probably going to get there. He went to New York to play US Open quali, so he had, you know, little bit of weird scheduling there recently, while Cerundolo decided to stay in Europe, and he made a great decision. Right now, he's going to take like 2 or 3 weeks of break and come back to South America, two weeks, I think, and then come back to South America, and he's definitely getting to the top 100 there. Like, if he plays a couple more challengers there, and he's going to have to play challengers because that's the only events that are left there, then he's definitely probably gonna overcome Francisco as well, which is something I wouldn't really have expected at the beginning of the year when Cerundolo was yet to win an ATP match, when he was, you know, he had like a challenger semi only from Montevideo in 2019. So him overtaking his brother with the very limited set of weapons that he has is pretty shocking, but you know, as we talked about last time, I mean, he's just a guy who keeps winning, even though he probably, maybe not shouldn't be, but it's really hard to determine how he's as effective as he is.
Yes, we also had Andre Matin make the semifinals, which shouldn't be news for a top seed, but I thought it was worth a mention since he's been struggling a lot recently. Obviously, it's not the most impressive run. He got a walkover in the first round from Guinard, and then beat Jonathan Mrita and Carlos Gomez Herrera. So it's not like he's back. Andre Martin, he's back to contending. But it was just nice to see him in the latter stages of the tournament. And we also had 17-year-old Marco Topo make the quarters here with after two very, very tight matches, with wins over Danilo Petrovic and Vitali Sachko before losing to Echeverri. He's actually turned 18. Oh, it's his birthday today. So, okay, I was confused.
Happy birthday, Marco Topo.
Happy birthday, Marco Topo. He gave himself a lovely early gift last week in Banja Luka. The tournament takes him into the top 1,000. He's actually number 879 now. So he went up 700 spots with those 18 points from that tournament. Anything else from Banja Luka?
Yeah, the Topo's match against Echeverri was also super competitive, which was kind of a surprise to me. But even though we talked about Topo a bit earlier in the season when he played doubles with Medjedovic and played in these Belgrade Challengers. Yeah, a huge talent as well. You talked about Martin, I think this was like the easiest path to a Challenger semi all year. Maritja Gomez-Herrera, really. And the match against Guinard is actually pretty funny because, you know, it was 0-0 when Guinard retired. Like, he retired after the first point.
Oh, I actually didn't know that.
It wasn't the walkover. I watched it. Like, maybe it's not funny, actually, because he released some sort of a stroke and then, like, caught his back. It seemed like, yeah, it didn't look good. I don't know if Guinard is gonna play soon, how serious it is, but anyhow, it wasn't a walkover. The match actually finished after 1 point, yeah. And I guess before we go to match and upset of the week, we could also mention that, last week I talked about a match between Stefan Kozlov and Daniel Rincon in Mallorca, how the quality was awful, and Daniel Rincon won the US Open Juniors.
Yeah.
I still stand by my opinion. Like, he's just a Spaniard. Like, he's super consistent, loopy strokes, which works in juniors, but I'm not sure if it's getting him far, honestly.
So projection wise, we're looking more at like Ramos Vinolas than Nadal when we're looking at
maybe, but you know, Ramos Vinolas still has had a fantastic career.
That's true.
Takes a lot to be Ramos Vinolas, so I don't know. But then again, I mean, I only saw the guy twice against Kozlov and in the finals against Yuncek Shangshan. So, match of the week, upset of the week, that's what you're supposed to. So what's your match of the week?
Match of the week, I have Thanasi Kokkinakis against Roman Sakulin in Inkasi, second round, 7-6, 3-6, 6-2. It was quite a good level. Very exciting first set tiebreaker, 12-10. So that's what I've gone for.
Yeah, I went with Oleksii Krutik, Orlando Rus. I guess a very good pick, but that was simply what I enjoyed the most this week. Very high level. Luz is, you know, recently made the Challenger final, and for Krutik to beat him like that, well, he pretty much only had one weaker game, which cost him the second set, but a fantastic performance from the Ukrainian youngster. And as for upset of the week, I feel like even though there were five events, there wasn't that much craziness this week. Yeah, so I went with Misolic Cecchinato. I guess it's only fair that, you know, he eliminated my pick for the title and someone who usually does extremely well in clay challengers.
Yes, I mean, Misolic Cecchinato is one of the two that I consider. The other one, we already talked about it, Franco Agamenone over Sebastian Baez. As I said, I would have bet my house and I would have lost it, so... Definitely upset of the week for me.
Yeah, I would have bet my house as well, probably in every single bias match this week. So, you know, maybe I would have four houses. No, that's probably not how it would work. I would have one house and
maybe 1.8 houses or something, because I your favorite.
He was a big favorite in everything. So 1.8 houses, and then I would have just 0.8 houses after the final. So I guess we should start talking about next week events in Szczecin, where I'm currently at. So obviously, you know, you're ready for this. I'm going to talk about the qualies for like 20 minutes now. No, probably not. But next week, you can probably, if I'm going to, you know, be able to come out of my comfort zone again, then I'm probably going to have some interviews to add to the podcast as well, because I'm staying here for the entire week. I just realized that seven seeded players won in the qualies tomorrow. And actually, the draws, the lots of qualifying draws this week on the Challenger Tour weren't even full. And so two more Poles than expected got in as alternates, Drzewiecki and Matuszewski, who usually only play doubles. So they ended up losing fairly comfortably. Max Kwaśniewski, probably the most talented Polish junior, played Vitali Saczko, and I was pretty surprised to see him take a set because, well, first of all, he was still in New York on Thursday. So it was a very short turnaround between the US Open Juniors and this for him. And yeah, Sachko is probably the most dangerous player in the qualifying intro. So it definitely wasn't the easiest opponent he could face. But the match had a very similar path to Kashnikovsky's loss to Samir Banerjee in US Open Juniors, like a very tight first set, but then energy levels just went down. I actually heard him talking a bit about that you know, his preparation for this part of the season wasn't ideal. And right now when he's playing tournament after tournament, there's just no space to fix that. And that fitness remains a bit of an issue for him simply because he needs to play week by week. So sometimes a bit of a break would do him good. I'm actually not sure what his plans next. I was really hoping for Szymon Kielan to get a win. We talked about him a lot when he made the second round at Warsaw. So that's how he got the chance to play here again. And he had a very off day against Alex Rybakov. He's very confident after the match. He kept talking that, you know, he everything was on his racket. When he was playing well, the opponents really didn't have much to say. But it's actually true in this particular case. Kielan was the player whose level really decided the match when he was able to stay more consistent in the second set. He dominated and then missed some very important breakback opportunities in the third that didn't allow him to stay in the match. I was hoping for this win, and I was also hoping for Maciej Rajski to beat Rudolf Moleker, and he did. As I mentioned when we talked about Tulln beating Moleker right now, is not really a huge surprise anywhere, but I mean, Rajski is 30. He's not a guy that usually gets these wild cards. He said he was very surprised that he got one. But he won a 15K in Łódź this summer, completely out of nowhere. It's actually just his second ITF title. The previous one was like 4 years ago. He's basically playing part-time right now on the Pro Tour, only playing in Polish events in the past 2 years. And it turns out that on Saturday, he was still in Germany playing some league tennis, like not Bundesliga, but the third level, Regionalliga Nordest, I believe. And it's actually pretty crazy that when you look at in the match that he played, the only name I recognized was his, but there were also two other guys that are pros. But in the third league of German tennis this year, there were names like Sachko, Vladimir Ignatik, Elias Immer. So it's actually pretty crazy that these guys still. I mean, the money has to be quite decent because obviously Rajski wouldn't really be playing anywhere else, so it makes sense for him. But I mean, Elias Immer, that's a name that can play pretty much in every single challenger in the world. But anyhow, Rajski beat Moleker, who's really out of form right now. Rajski said after the match that he didn't even play that well. I don't know if I agree with that. I think he's kind of selling himself short there, but he said that he was pretty much doing anything to disrupt Moleker's rhythm with slicing, with just, you know, changing with his variety. And Moleker didn't react well to that. He just said that he played the way Moleker doesn't like playing, and that was exactly the right choice. I mean, he stuck with the game plan and it worked. They actually met 3 years ago at Szczecin. In the first round of the challenger, Rajski had a wild card back then, and Moleker won fairly comfortably. But you know, we know that Moleker 3 years ago is a very different player to what we're seeing right now. Moleker's attitude also wasn't great, and tomorrow will be today actually, because we're recording in the morning, will be the final qualifying round and a lot of the first round matches, which we're going to talk about in a moment. But Rajski plays Vatutin, which is winnable. Vatutin didn't look good yesterday. He struggled against Andre Goranson, who hasn't played singles in 2 years, over 2 years, I think. So maybe there is actually a chance to, you know, for Rajski to qualify. There were a lot of doubles specialists because of the not full draw. And what I really enjoy about it is that they really try hard. Like they might not have played singles in a while, But when they step onto the court, you know, they're fighting to their deaths. Like guys like Goranson, Nathaniel Lamons, even Drzewiecki, although his attitude also wasn't that great. He started hitting some trick shots in the second set and all. But they were all really motivated and frustrated when it wasn't going well, even though, you know, Lamons couldn't really expect to defeat Nicola Kuhn on clay, right? But he still hoped so. I mean, it's great to see how competitive these guys are.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little disappointed by the lack of a Jan Želiński wildcard or appearance in this qualifying, considering that he's been pretty good. I mean, he reached a second round. So I would have hoped to see him over Drzewiecki or
Lamons. Was an alternate, right?
Yeah, I mean, I assume all of them were, but he's also in the tournament. So I'm not sure if it was just his personal choice to.
I'm assuming so, because if he would have signed up for the qualies, then he would have gotten in. His singles ranking is a lot better than Drzewiecki's or Matuszewski's. So yeah.
Then just printed in Želiński himself, as opposed to the organizers. Then he should have given it a shot, I think, because he would have had a pretty good chance.
Yeah, you're right. I completely forgot about the fact that he's playing singles right now.
But yeah, looking at the main draw, as we mentioned, Martinez pulled out. But this is incredibly stacked, especially when you look at the bottom half, where we only have one qualifier. Especially the fourth quarter. I mean, Jesus Christ, that's going to be brutal. But let's start with the top. We have Albert Ramos Viñolas as the top seed, opening against qualifier lucky loser. In his section is Thiago Monteiro. The other three guys that we know is going to be three qualifiers or the lucky loser are Petrovic, Trungeliti, and Diaz. So, I mean, not the worst section for Ramos Viñolas, who looking at his recent results, he's been sort of kind of average, like sort of what you expect from him on hard courts. But yeah, I'm pretty curious to see him. Obviously won Estoril earlier this year, so he should definitely be amongst the favorites for Szczecin. In the next section was supposed to be the Martinez section. Now it's Lehechka plays qualifier lucky loser. We have Daniel Michalski with the wildcard playing Tyson Kwiatkowski, which is interesting of him to come play this tournament, sort of unexpected. We have Echeverry playing as Jake Clark, and we have the all Czech first round derby between fifth seed Jiří Veselý and Zdeněk Kolář. Going to the bottom half, we have the Cecchinato section, although he's playing Denis Novák in the first round, so that's quite tough for him. We have Hugo Gaston, finalist this week against Hanfmann. We have a wildcard for Pavel Ciaś. Am I saying that right? I don't think so. All right. Yeah,
it's pretty close.
And then 8th seed Stefano Travaglia against Sumit Nagal. And then this last section, my God. 2nd seed Pablo Andujar playing Carlos Taberner. Yeah, that's the first round that you mentioned. Very tough for him. Then in the second round, potentially Holger Rune, who's playing Taro Daniel. We have 7th seed Roberto Carbaez Baena, who's coming off of a final, playing qualifier. Potentially in the second round for him, Kamil Majerczak. This is a crazy section. I look at this. This can be a quarterfinal. And I wouldn't blink an eye. It would make kind of a sense for it to be quarterfinal. Yeah, amazing draw in Szczecin. Who has caught your eye the most here?
Yeah, I mean, this is a perfect moment for the Challenger Tour, because there's no Davis Cup anymore. Like, only some countries play Davis Cup this week, and there's no main tour event. So, you know, it was actually supposed to be the top 100 players in Szczecin, but Martinez pulled out, so it's 7 right now, and 13 on the Challenger Tour. Taberner Andujar is a fantastic first round matchup, which is actually going to be the match of the day today, which means that it's going to be played not before 7 p.m. I actually have never seen Kamil Majerczak win a tennis match live. Every time I go to an event, he loses first round.
I mean, if he's ever going to do it, Pellegrino has been quite.
This horrible. Is a very good chance. Yes, definitely. But he, I already watched him lose to Pedro Cacci indefinitely, Jeremy Yan, and Zdeněk Kolář. So yeah, it never really was that hard. So I don't know. Maybe I'm just he's unlucky. He's not gonna play. I don't think he's gonna play on Monday. Yeah, he's playing on Tuesday, so not today. As you said, Tyson Fedkowski playing a clay 125 when there's a carry challenger in the States. It's very weird. But I feel like Michalski actually has a chance against him. I should say why the guys got the wild cards. Michalski, there's this tradition in Szczecin that the Polish national champion gets a wild card. And actually this year it was Kamil Majchrzak, so he didn't require one. Żuk was the runner-up. He also wouldn't have required one had he wanted to play this event. And the third in the semis there were Michalski and Kaśnikowski. So Michalski got the wild card as a result of that, and Kaśnikowski got the qualies one, which I think is a very good choice because Kaśnikowski is at a point in time where he just needs matches against good pros, and it doesn't really matter whether it's qualies or main draw. And for Michalski, he needs points. He doesn't need to play more against experienced opponents. He's already done that. And Paweł Ciaś got the wild card as the best player of the PZT National Polish Tour, which is a series of events. It's actually Szczecin Challenger, Poznań Challenger, and between the two, there were five ITFs, 325Ks in Wrocław, Poznań, and Grodzisk Mazowiecki, and 215Ks in Łódź, and Łódź was the one that Maciej Rajski won, and in Gdynia. And Ciaś played four of them and made the quarters in each, lost in the final at Poznań to Ronan Puruczaga. So that's how he got the wild card. He's also not the youngest guy. I think he's 27 at the moment, maybe 26. But I'm very happy he got it because he's probably my favorite Pole to watch. 27. He's 27. And he definitely deserved that because he out of the guys that competed in ITFs recently, he's probably playing at the highest level at the moment. Kopriva is not the toughest draw, but also not the easiest. So I don't know. He's obviously a massive underdog there, but he's been he hasn't been a stranger to big upsets in Szczecin. 2 years ago, he reached the third round, beating, who was it? Peter Torebko, I think, and then Alessandro Giannesi. So maybe he can do something. This match is going to be today, and I'm super excited for it. And as for my winner pick, as you said, the bottom half is very stacked. So it was very natural for me to go with Ramos Vinolas. But one more thing I need to say about this is that there is that Spanish curse that gets talked about in Szczecin, because this is the 28th edition of the tournament and a Spaniard has never won that. And obviously there are years when a lot of Spaniards come. With Martinez, they would have had an even better chance, but this is a perfect year for them. They've got Andújar, Taberner, Carbáez Baena, Ramos Vinolas. I mean, all these guys could easily win this. So I don't know. Maybe this is when they finally take that down. Ramos Vinolas was actually the top seed and the top 50 player as well 2 years ago, but lost in the semis to Guido Andreozzi. So he already had a pretty good chance. And when I'm looking at the results of the tournament right now, past history, then there were 9 Spanish finalists and they all lost. Davidovich Fokina, Pere Riba, Inigo Cervantes, and way back, Albert Montañez, Alberto Martin, David. Hey, so unfortunately, we had a bit of an issue here. I really should get a new computer. And the reasoning being that for the second time, it actually Zoom stopped responding and the recording cut off at here. We had a lot more minutes to go for all five events. But we actually can't record it later because I'm gonna have to leave to the Szczecin Challenger in a second to the courts. So I'm gonna have to take you through it by myself. And pretty quickly too. I'm going to give Jakub Speaks as well and tell you the reasoning for them, if I remember. So where we stopped was Szczecin, and I picked Ramos Vinolas. And Jakub went for Echeverry, so he's thinking that the Spanish curse will stay. Basically, his reasoning was that the draw is very nice, pretty much until the semis. If he's on his best level, he shouldn't really struggle that much. Then we go to Rennes, and there's a plethora of amazing seats here, like Richard Gasquet, Benjamin Bonzi, Arthur Rinderknecht. Very stacked field as well. It's such under 90. And we've got Andy Murray as a wild card, which is always a big story. He's going to play Yannick Madden in the opening round, then Roman Safiulin in qualifier. So definitely winnable. Harold Mayo got a wild card, the Australian Open 2020 men's boys singles champion. And he's going to play Mats Moraink, which is obviously a very tough draw, but Moraink is going to have to jump from clay to indoor hard very quickly. We've also got a very interesting first-round matchup between Barrera and Van Rijthoven. And Bonzi plays third week in a row and gets Ymer, then possibly Zhuk, which is a very hard draw when you're probably not feeling that well physically. I went with Arthur Rinderknecht. I was always saying that, you know, indoors he's going to really hit it off, that indoors is going to be his part of the season. So I'm going to pick this so that my prophecy can be fulfilled. We'll see if it will. As for Jakub, he went with Andy Murray, which is, you know, he admitted that it was more of a wishful thinking pick. But then again, why not? I mean, Murray's level is pretty good at the moment after what we saw at the US Open. We also considered Gasquet, definitely. Whenever he shows up on the Challenger Tour, he's always, you know, reminds us that he's of very high quality. In Kerry, American hard courts, we've got so many interesting first rounds, like Sandgren Eubanks. You know, Sandgren, it's been a terrible year for him, and Eubanks won a Challenger. Eubanks played very well at the US Open. I mean, this could be a first round exit for Sandgren. We've also got Salvatore Caruso, Christian Harrison, a very interesting choice from Salvatore Caruso to play on American hard courts. Stefan Kozlov, Zachary Svajda. Svajda won a round at the US Open, so he could also get on a bit of a run here. He's the current USTA Boys 18s champion, actually did it twice already. Mitchell Krueger could be a very dangerous contender as well. There's a couple of college wildcards like Lukas Tai or Gareth Jones. And there's the second seed, Dennis Kudla, who's going to play Donald Young. And Young actually needs the head-to-head 7-1, which is pretty crazy. But Kudla, as the second seed, is my pick for the title. Young is obviously a non-factor recently, and I really like Kudla's draw to get farther. I was also considering Mitchell Krueger. Jakub said he was also thinking of Kudla. We talked briefly on Svajda as well, but he went with Bien Fratangelo, who's the eighth seed and has a pretty tough quarters against Sandgren Eubanks, but starts against the qualifier and then Ulysses Blanc or qualifier. Yeah, once again, sorry, we have to do it this way, but I unfortunately don't have time to record again with Jakub this Monday. And well, I really should get that computer sorted out soon. In Istanbul, the top seed is James Duckworth. It's not a big event in terms of money, but in terms of the field, a lot of good players arrived. Andrei Kuznetsov, Evgeny Donskoy is a fantastic first round, and it's really intriguing because Kuznetsov used to coach Donskoy back in 2019 when he was inactive for 2.5 years. So I can't really think of any other former coach, former protege matchups. It's really exciting. Thomas Fabiano plays Ilya Marchenko in the opening round. Marchenko hasn't played since the Challenger Tour since May, so it's going to be very exciting to see how he does. He was actually very competitive in Atlanta and Washington and all the other American hardcourt events. Then we also got a very weird wildcard for Vlad Victor Cornea, who also isn't even playing doubles here, so it's pretty shocking. And Radu Albot is the second seed, and he actually hasn't played on the Challenger Tour since March 2020 at Indian Wells. So he's coming back after a while, and we'll see if he still has the quality. I went with Ilya Marchenko based on the fact that, well, he has a very tough draw, but I thought his summer form was great. And so did Jakub. He also went with Ilya Marchenko. And the last event is Quito, with a terrible field, honestly. Like, this is the worst field we've had on the Challenger Tour this year, I feel. Patrick Kipson is the last direct acceptance, and he's like 570 or something like that. Yeah, and as for the seeds, we've got Andre Martin here, who's coming off a semi-final at Banja Luka. He obviously loves South American clay, and, well, he's Slovakian, so, you know, Jakub usually picks him. And he did go for him again, but this week it's a solid idea, because Martin, yeah, he would usually skip European events to go to South America and do well, even though his year has been terrible. But as we mentioned, the draw isn't that tough. His fifth seed is Juan Pablo. His seed in the other seed in his section is Juan Pablo Fikovic, who hasn't been doing that well. Lucas Catarina could be dangerous. Duarte Esteve Lobato could be dangerous. The best section by far is the one with Vieira Martinez and Tirante as the seeds, and Gonzalo Lama. Gonzalo Lama has been coming back after a long break as well, and already won four tournaments this year. He's got like a 42-14 win-loss record and advanced 300 spots in the rankings already, over 300 actually. And even though Lama and Vieira Martinez are very dangerous, I went with Tirante, who's, in my opinion, the most talented player in this draw. And his peak level is probably higher than anyone else. Can he reach that? Well, we shall see. But I think he could have a chance to get on a bit of a run here. The qualities draw wasn't even full. There's just 8 people, and you only need one match to qualify, which is funny because, you know, pretty much any tennis player could have gone to Quito and signed up as an alternate. Even the doubles guys didn't want to. And yeah, one thing that I missed in Istanbul, Alexander Bublik is playing doubles, but not singles. He's actually playing with Daniil Golubev. At first, you know, I thought it was Andrei Golubev, but it's Daniil Golubev, the 19-year-old Russian. And it looks like they played a futures event together 5 years ago. So they must have been, you know, they must have known each other for a while and probably are, you know, somewhat close friends, because I can't imagine any other reason for Golubev to play Istanbul Challenger in doubles. Yeah, and that's where we're gonna, you know, cap it. I have to leave to the Szczecin grounds in a moment. Sorry you once again for doing that this way, but we can't really, yeah. It's my fault, honestly, for not buying a new computer, and hopefully I'm gonna be forced to soon, and hopefully we're not gonna be able to have less issues like this. So thanks for listening if you got to this point, and we're gonna meet next week to discuss Szczecin, Ren, Kari, Istanbul, and Quito. Thank you.
Hope all of you enjoyed another ATP Challenger-centric edition of the show. A shout-out and thank you, as always, to Damian and Jakob for their coverage of the Challenger Tour. I sincerely mean it each week when I say you are not going to find two people more ensconced in all things happening at the Challenger level. Of course, there are 5 of them this weekend. I'm sure we will discuss them on the Mini Break podcast. Of course, if you are looking for U.S. Open recap content, it can be found there. Had David Kane join me to talk about the women's singles event on Monday, Gil Gross joining me Tuesday to talk about the men. Of course, all of that content available on our website, crackrackets.com, as well. But of course, like, rate, subscribe, review to this show, the Mini Break podcast, our Cracked Interviews podcast, and everything we're doing here at Cracked Rackets. Of course, if you need the more immediate updates, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, we are at Cracked Rackets. You want to message me directly, I'm at GreatShotPod. A shout out, as always, to our super producers, Max Ligner and Daniel Westoff, for the of an editing job they do day in, day out. Shout out as well to our friends over at Tennis Point. Remember, it's tennis-point.com. The promo code is CR15. With that in mind, for host Damian Kust and Jakub Babro, our super producers, Fliegner and Westhoff, our friends at Tennis Point, from all of us here at both Cracked Rackets and the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, I'm your host, Alex Gruskin. You know what we say. Hey, great shot, and we will see you all tomorrow. Thanks, everyone.